It is a Friday, and that means it's time for Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. As always, we're brought to you by Blue Tail Medical Group. Great alternative to surgery. They'll keep you in the game. Doctors Bays, Crane, and Wolf, located in Chesterfield. So if you have an arm issue, leg issue, knee issue, and you're scheduled for surgery, before you do it, make sure you contact them, because they have a situation where they have figured out the body's ability to regenerate and heal itself before surgery and get you back on your feet or back in the game. Make sure you do it. BlueTailMedicalGroup.com, and tell them you heard it here on Scoops with DannyMac.com. Hey, Ben, good morning to you. Lots to get into. How's it going?
Good morning, Dan. Happy Friday to you. I'm good. Have plenty of things to write about, so I'm happy. And I'm doing well, man. Hope everybody's fired up for what will hopefully be a good weekend.
Absolutely. And let's start, though, with some of the big news of the week. And you have been all over this. Randy Carricker of 101 ESPN, he's been all over it. You guys have been in the courtrooms and seen how this has transpired. And that's the lawsuit against the Rams. What's your latest? And the bombshell report, Seth Wickersham yesterday, or a couple of days ago, I guess it's been now, from ESPN. Just your thoughts on that and what's happening right now.
Well, my first thought is it was a hell of a story by Seth. And I think Seth deserves a lot of applause here in St. Louis, because he's one of the few national media members who have paid attention to this case, who have followed it. And I know he's caught some heat at times, Dan, for maybe not writing about it as much as people wished he would. But his job is to cover the league. And, you know, he's not as concerned with the day-to-day tick-tock of the case here in St. Louis. But, you know, he goes where the league's big stories are, and this is becoming one. And now he's writing it as such. He's the only guy nationally who covers the league who folks would know who's been to St. Louis to attend a hearing. I know it because I got lunch with him before one of them. So Seth is not going to shy away from a big story, unlike some of the people who cover the league. So I think he deserves credit for writing this. My God, it sounded like he was in the meeting when you read the story. So I don't know. He's got great sources, and clearly to be able to write as definitive of a story about this owner's meeting that really turned on this issue is pretty compelling. So this is just some context, Dan. Look, this is the first in-person owners meeting that NFL has had in a while due to the pandemic. And think about all these issues that could have been the topic, you know, the main topic of discussion for these owners. You got everything from the Washington football investigation to the, you know, the emails that are going around about John Gruden and from John Gruden. Deshaun Watson situation is a nightmare. And instead, what dominates this league meeting between owners is their growing concerns about this lawsuit, and specifically the fact that Stan Kroenke is now kind of getting cold feet, if you will, on this indemnification agreement, which from the jump, when you and I have talked about it, I've said, hey, look, I know there is some sort of an agreement, but we don't know exactly what it says. And I would not assume Stan is just going to be okay with being on the hook for whatever comes out of this, because that's not how he rolls. Well, here it is. The costs are adding up. And he sees this January trial coming, they don't feel good about it. So now he's automatically saying, okay, I need to revisit the terms of this to make sure that I can spread this around, the growing cost of this lawsuit. And the other owners are shocked. They're surprised that he's trying to renege on this. And everyone here laughs because that's Stan Kroenke being Stan Kroenke. But these owners seem stunned, according to Seth, that he would do this. And it's led to this kind of this big discussion, this big argument. At one point, Stan Kroenke leaves the room. This is exactly what the lawsuit was intended to do, make these owners turn against one another. And it sounds like the knives are very much out as this boils toward a January trial. So I thought there was some few compelling points in there. The fact that John Mara said bluntly that they would never have allowed the Rams to move if Stan Kroenke would not have agreed to be on the hook for all the legal expenses. It suggests that they knew things would be stemming from this, and that they didn't think it was all that right. And it's funny to me, too, that the league seems so worried about just a couple things in what is really a mountain's worth of evidence of all these lies and fraud. They're worried about an email, and they're worried about one deposition. Well, this – through the hearings alone and through the public documents that we've been able to get alone, there's there's so much more than that. There's Kevin Dimoff's lies, which we've known about for a long time. There's John Mara in his deposition saying that he picked the other relocation plan because he thought the St. Louis stadium did enough to keep the Rams, the proposal for the riverfront. There's Jerry Richardson sending emails that raise questions about the integrity of Eric Grubman and, you know, and why the league is chasing money instead of following the guidelines. I mean, there's so much there that if they're worried about one email or one deposition, they have no clue as to what this discovery process has turned up. So it was great insight into how the league is starting to worry about this, but I still don't think they even really know what it's about to hit them in January.
Yeah, I happen to agree with you, and to the point that some of the owners were stunned being in that room and then hearing Jeff Pasch of the NFL ask Kroenke to leave, as you mentioned, which is really unheard of, to ask another owner to leave the owners' meetings. And then all of a sudden these other owners going, wait a minute, hold on. I mean, I thought this was going to be kind of taken care of and Stan was going to take care of all the legal fees. And if there was something that came out of that, he'd take care of that. And Stan all of a sudden is saying, nah, I'm not going to do that. And so now if you have the infighting with the owners, this is where it really gets interesting to see what the next step is from these owners in the NFL and how they try to make this thing work.
Right. And there were a couple other things that jumped out there. Jerry Jones is the one guy defending Kroenke. Well, of course he is. Jerry Jones was the one strong-arming the move, and he was the one who got the fat contract for his Legends Corporation for the services out of the deal. So he has a vested interest in defending Stan, at least for now. I mean, Jerry's not usually one to take a plant a flag on the losing side of things. He kind of knows which sides to pick that are going to win usually, unless it's like his football team, which never wins. But in terms of getting what he wants, so we'll see if he starts to get cold feet on Stan too. But the fact that there's division now within the ranks, that's important, because when it comes to having your best defense at a trial, you really want those sides working together, not against each other. If you are the NFL, and the fact that this is causing some circles to form within the circle is pretty significant. The other thing too is a mention from Jeff Pasch in Seth's article to the owners when asked if Stan had tried to settle this. He told them yes, but there seemed to be conflicting reports, Dan, as to what that amount was. One of Wickersham's sources told him it was less than $1 billion. One of them told him it was more than that. I asked the St. Louis side this week. I mean, I said, look, there's a report out of a settlement being offered. You guys need to, you know, I have to ask you guys to address that. And they chose not to. That's you know, they can certainly take that path. But what was offered and could there be a counter offer? Those are questions people want to know. I get it. To my understanding, if there was an offer, it was a lowball one. To my understanding, there's been nothing on the table or desired about an expansion team. But again, we'll see where this goes. And it shouldn't be overlooked, Dan, that two of the guys who are chirping Kroenke the hardest in this meeting, John Mara of the Giants and Robert Kraft of the Patriots. Well, those are two of the guys who are going to have to now sit for another deposition with St. Louis lawyers about their net worth, because they did not meet the requirements of Judge Christopher McGraw and what they had to hand over to the league in terms of determining potential punitive damages. So for folks who are wondering, why is the St. Louis side coming after all these cell phone records? Why are they coming after all this financial data? For this exact purpose, it's now got these owners saying, why am I handing this over? I shouldn't be involved in this. Stan's going to have to pay for all this, right? Now Kroenke's saying, well, maybe not, which is going to lead to even more fighting and more chances for this thing to really fracture, and any fracturing that happens is going to be a benefit to St. Louis.
Do you think it, with this, some of the owners that maybe were blindsided by this and then found out, oh, by the way, I may be having to pay for some of this, do you think they come out, break the ranks and say, yeah, I'll talk about it, no problem? Or is that taking it too far?
Well, I mean, hell, when you have, you have the Davis family in your ownership group, I mean, he doesn't care what he says. I mean, he's the one pushing the league to release all of the findings of the Washington investigation, which is exactly what the NFL doesn't want to do. So yeah, these are proud, egotistical, very wealthy men, and they're not used to being told no. They're not used to being told they're not above the law, and they're not used to paying for things they don't want to pay for. So if this results in that, then I think things could get very, very ugly very fast. And I think the uglier they get, the better it is for the St. Louis side of things, which is officially just kind of sitting back and popping popcorn and watching this fire start to burn in the NFL. And it's a lot of irony, right? I mean, look, this is the same guy who said, you know, when he became the majority owner of the team, that he was going to work to keep the Rams in St. Louis. And, you know, we all know how that played out. So it's a little rich to hear, you know, hear and read about the NFL realizing that Stan is still Stan. You know, his word means nothing if it goes against what's helping his bottom line. And the list of people who have been scorned or backstabbed or trapdoored by this guy in business dealings is longer than his list of properties owned. I mean, the list goes on and on and on, and now he's going to try to do it against some of the richest and most powerful people in America.
I'm really curious too. And you mentioned expansion team, and there's people that I'm sure are listening to this that listen to us every Friday, and they're fans of football. May not be fans of the NFL and how this whole thing went down, clearly, but they'd say, hey, if the owners would come together and say, you know what? Our payment back to you is an expansion team in which you have. You know, we're going to build the stadium. We're going to take care of the the expansion fee, and we're going to put an expansion team in St. Louis. A lot of fans would say, "Sign me up," and sure, we'll let bygones be bygones. Is that even something? You know, Mike Florio had that a couple of weeks ago, and he's not going to go just spouting something crazy. I mean, I would assume he's getting fed some of this. Is that even legitimate in your mind?
I think there are so many things that would have to be answered before it can be legitimate. And I think you're right. I don't think Florio is just throwing it out there, just making it up at all. And I don't want to come across as disrespectful to him, but I'll say this, like Mike Florio can say that and move on. And, you know, a year from now, when this thing is settled, whatever way it is, you know, he can say, well, it didn't happen. If I were to say something like that and it didn't happen, then people would want, you know, people would hate me and I would understand why. So I don't see that being realistic at this time. Now, things could potentially change, but when I think about what has to change, I think it's pretty unrealistic. There'd have to be an owner. Does St. Louis want to welcome an out-of-town owner for a league it doesn't trust? There would have to be a stadium. Where does the team play? How does that get built? Who pays for it? There would have to be, you know, repaired relationships with all of the businesses and places that invested with the Rams that got burned because of it. You know, St. Louis has made a pivot, you know, in some ways, at least one of the very prominent families in St. Louis toward, you know, becoming an MLS city. And not that you have to be one or the other, but that's gobbled up some of the, you know, money, some of the energy, some of the relationships that maybe would have helped get an NFL expansion team. So I don't think it's realistic that the NFL wants to offer it up. I don't think it's realistic right now that St. Louis would rush to take one. Who's the owner? You know, I don't see that person who's dying to bring football to St. Louis that has the trust of the region right now. Could things change? Sure. But I think for the moment right now, I don't think it's very realistic. And I know that makes me a bad guy in some eyes, and I get that. I can tell you what I know and what I think. What I know, it's not being discussed right now. What I think, I don't think St. Louis should do it, even if it gets the chance. And I know that's a polarizing opinion, but I will always on this matter be sure to draw a line between those two. I don't think it is realistic at this moment. Even if I was against it, I would tell you if I thought it was.
Yeah, you've done a great job with this, and looking forward to reading what you have, not only today, you had some stuff on it yesterday, but this weekend as it continues to unfold. And you're going to hear more and more about this from, you know, early January, when this court date would happen if they don't settle, is really not that far away, Ben. I mean, you're talking a couple of months, and it's going to happen quickly, and you've got the holidays, and things happen to move quickly then, so it's right around the corner.
It's going to be a nice little post-Christmas fodder present, right? But yeah. No, how about this timing, though? You know what it's going to line up with? It's like weeks
the
separated only from the Super Bowl, which is going to be hosted in the Rams' home stadium, SoFi Stadium. I mean, you could not write that any better. It's pretty poetic, so... There are certainly going to be people in the league who say this, we got to get rid of this, we got to make this story go away. But here's the problem. You know, if the settlement, whatever was or wasn't discussed, whatever was or was not presented, if it wasn't enough and you're going to come back and counter, try to counter with a higher settlement, you know, something that makes this legal team and the people it represents, the city, the county, the Dome Authority, give up the chance of a trial, which I think they very much want to go to trial. I think they're looking forward to the trial. They'd have to get a number that was big enough to make them just decide they did not want to follow through with the trial because they couldn't risk, you know, not grabbing the settlement. You know, who's going to agree on that now? Because if there's fighting about who pays for it, if Stan Kroenke says the league has to pick up some of this tab and the league is saying, no, this is all on you, then I don't exactly see them coming to a very sensible idea of a settlement. So that could get complicated too.
Absolutely. Ultimately, who would decide, in your opinion, whether or not they would take this to court, take the chance, and they could lose, or say, if the NFL came with a settlement of, let's just say, an arbitrary number, $1 billion, who decides, you know what, we got $1 billion out of them, let's settle? Would that be from both the county and the city and obviously the lawyers all coming together? Or is this, you know, the lawyers saying, look, we're the ones that did this. Yeah, you're on the suit, but we're going to be the ones that decide this.
Yeah, no, the lawyers, you know, you have to take the offers. You have to conversate about the offers you receive with the people you represent. You know, now, if you trust your lawyer, and, you know, it would make a lot of sense to trust the lawyers in this case because they're the ones who pursued this. They're the ones who've won almost every turn of it so far. They very much seem to have the NFL and the owners backed into a corner here. Pretty much everything they've done has worked to this point. So I think there's a lot of everybody's on the same page, it seems like. But it would be the leaders of city and county government. And those leaders are more or less the ones who, you know, control the Dome Authority. So really, that's it. You know, it'd be a city-county agreement. And then the folks who make those decisions for those entities would make the decisions on a settlement. But I do think that a lot of this hinges on what the professional opinion of the lawyers who are working on this case. And, you know, I think the best way to explain it is really that it would have to be a number that is so big it convinces them to basically rob themselves of this trial of a lifetime that they've worked for and they think they can win.
Yeah.
I think they're pretty confident they can win this thing, and they haven't seen much up to this point that suggests that they should think otherwise. It's not a federal trial. It's not something that the league can use its influence to change. It's Missouri law, and it's going to be held here unless the league somehow, you know, wins a Hail Mary attempt to get a venue change. And if they do, then the case travels. It's not like it's something that is going to fall apart if you change venues on it. So I think they feel good about what they have. And I think there is an element, too, from the region of wanting to, you know, go through with a trial because they want to set the record straight. They want to change this thing long term and make a difference here in how St. Louis was wrong. Now, there's always a number. You know, money runs the world. So there's always a number that can make you change your plans. It doesn't sound to me like the NFL's gotten anywhere close to it yet.
All right, let's switch gears. Some quick hitters. We start with Ali Marmol as the new manager of the Cardinals. Not very surprising for me. How about for you?
No, I mean, you knew if they were going to keep it in-house that Ali was right there, you know, probably a half step ahead of Subby Clapp, who I think also, you know, had a legitimate case to be considered. And, you know, while the surprising nature of the firing and all of the still unknown parts that we haven't quite pieced in about why Mike Schilt is gone, for all of that distraction and some things that maybe will or won't come out later, I thought Ali did a great job, Dan. I thought he nailed the introduction. I thought he showed a lot of class and really a look at who he is by thanking Schilt. And you know, he could have not touched on the topic or kind of minimized his relationship. He didn't. I thought he was really good at explaining some of the things that needed to be explained. How does he view this role? How does he view his relationship with Jeff Albert, someone Mike Schilt clashed with? How does he view his relationship with the front office in terms of making decisions and connecting all these departments? So I think the more Ali talks, the better people feel about the hire. He's well prepared. He's earned this opportunity. You don't have to like the way Schilt was let go or why to think that Ali's going to be a really good manager for the Cardinals. And I think the Cardinals were wise to get him in that spot and get him in there quick to try to help, you know, push away the Schilt storyline some. I think that was wise.
Anything that he said in his press conference had really caught your attention in terms of how he may be different or just anything in general that caught your attention?
Well, it sounds to me like he's going to, you know, be less committed to a, you know, more of a less of a traditional lineup. He wants to move guys around a lot. Sounds like he's going to be way more opening to platooning. Some of this we'll have to see to believe fully, right? The Cardinals every spring go to spring training and tell us, Dan, that they're going to consider a six-man rotation, and they don't do it. So we've heard talks of platoons in the past that haven't always planned out, but his stated aggressiveness with how he wants to make the lineup more dynamic, with how he does not view something that has to be the same every day. He wants to play the matchups and really kind of weaponize all of this information that he can tap into. That bodes well. And I think if he's able to do that and it works and people will get on board with it, the one thing that would really help him is to have a better roster to do it with. You know, that's the thing, is the Dodgers look really great when they pull an all-star off the bench and he hits a pinch hit home run. But you know what? They've got really, really good players. So having a more proven, a little bit more dynamic roster would help him really put that strength to a test if he's going to go down that road.
I wonder how aggressive the Cardinals will be this offseason. Looming CBA expires December 1st, so we just don't know how that's going to play out, if teams will be active before then and then get really active even more so after. But it should make for an intriguing offseason.
One of two ways, right? Either I could see him taking both. One is, man, who knows if there's going to be a season next year. You can't commit a bunch of money when you're not sure. I do hope that there's going to be a full season next year. It does, I think, sound realistic that spring training will likely be shortened. And that's probably, you know, the worst kept secret in baseball is that everybody doesn't mind if that would happen. Both players and owners just keep spring training short, whatever, but don't mangle the season. So that's the hope. But again, you can't commit a bunch of money not knowing, right? So I could see the Cardinals kind of basically just sitting tight until they have a better view of what happens. Or, and I could see this route too, and I don't know which way they're leaning. They haven't said. Maybe we'll get more from them at the upcoming GM meetings. But they could say, hey, we made a kind of controversial managerial change. We've got a good team coming back. Let's go out and really back up our managerial change by getting a roster that can really take off. I mean, that's the best way to make a move look smart, is to win a bunch, right? That's no matter the sport, whatever, the more you win, the happier people are. So they have a team that has some dead weight coming off the books. They could go a lot of different ways with how they want to spend that money if they feel good about their chances next season and the chances of there being a next season. So I don't know. Maybe you have a better sense, but they've been playing things pretty close to the vest since announcing Ollie's hire. I'm curious to see when they decide to kind of offer up a little bit of their plans for the offseason, because there's really some different directions they could go. Rotation, obviously. Are they going to get into the shortstop market, or they want to kind of handle that internally? Are they going to use, you know, Juan Yepez for the DH and maybe Nolan Gorman? Are they going to look for a bopper there? Based off some of the things we've said, you can try to read into it and say maybe they're going to create opportunities for internal guys, pick a few, you know, wise areas to throw some money around and try to blend it. But we haven't heard much from them on that front.
What are your thoughts on this weekend for Mizzou? They've got Vanderbilt, probably not one of the more enticing matchups on the schedule for the SEC, but just, you know, they get the week off, kind of a chance to regroup. They get Luther Burden, so there's excitement there. So two-prong question, just quickly on the game. But secondly, what kind of momentum have you heard that Eli Drinkwitz and recruiting, what have they gotten out of that, the football program, by getting Luther Burden?
Dan, I can't say anything quickly. You know that by now.
Isn't that the truth?
Quickly on the game, okay, not a marquee matchup. You don't want to be playing the game where the league is showcasing another game in the same time slot, but that's where Missouri and Vanderbilt and South Carolina are right now. You don't want to be the worst team in your division Saturday. You can prove that you're not. They need to see better play from Connor Bazelak. He's had a week off to rest, whatever bumps and bruises he has. I need to see a defense that's playing okay against a terrible offense. Steve Wilkes' job is on the line here in the second half, and he's had a bye week to fix things. If he's not going to get some good play out of this defense, or even decent, then he can't be around next year. As far as Burden, it's probably the biggest win Eli's had this season. Folks are fired up about recruiting moving forward, and that's what you have to do if you're not winning on the field. It's promised folks a brighter future is ahead, and it should be. If you can get guys who can play at Georgia and Florida, then you're going to be able to beat or at least compete with the Georgias and the Floridas. So things are looking good long-term for his recruiting, but there's a second half here where he can maybe take some sourness off the first part of the season.
Have you heard that other kids, or has Burden tried to get other kids to either decommit and come to Mizzou, or a groundswell of some of these local kids saying, yeah, let's be the group that really changes this?
Well, Burden said that when he committed, he's already been recruiting. He wants to turn the tide in a major way for St. Louis talent going toward Mizzou. And I think folks are going to be buzzing, whenever that name, image, likeness deal is finalized, that Luther Burden will certainly get. That's going to move some needles, I think, in terms of the recruiting side of things, too. And, there should be more value in a player going to a home state school than there is a guy going all the way across the country. So if Mizzou can take advantage of that, then that will help them down the line too. But yeah, I think he's going to be an outspoken, kind of rally builder for Mizzou on the recruiting trail. And guys want to play with good players. That's how it works. And, they're the best recruiters. If you can put guys in the league, that helps. But also if you have enticing recruiting classes that are telling their buddies, hey, come with me, that helps a ton too. And it doesn't just have to be the same class. It can be 1 year, 2 year, 3 years down the line.
Final question for you. We'll wrap it up with this. And by the way, shameless plug, this weekend on Fox 2 at 10:30 Sunday, Scoops with Danny Mac television show. It's a look back at the Ascension Charity Classic. Some really cool stuff that maybe people didn't see. So whether you're a golf fan or you love St. Louis, love the region, gets into the monies raised and where it all goes and just how successful that event was in St. Louis. Now, I want to ask you about Javonte Perkins. A huge loss for SLU. Young man decides to come back one more year and a torn ACL this past week, and that is a big blow for the Billikens.
I hate it. It makes me – I read it on my phone, and I wanted to throw my phone at the wall. I hate it for so many reasons, Dan. First and foremost, he's a great guy, great player. He's been a great a great asset for the Billikens, and he's a great story. You know, transfers in, becomes this – special player, and is now to the point where he's a force in the A-10, and it's kind of his show. He's the guy this year, and he was leaning into it. Travis was challenging him to be that guy, to prove he could be the lead scorer when every scouting report has his name in bold on the top. And to have a season cut out from underneath him when you return to take advantage of the COVID season, it just breaks your heart. And, on top of a great player, what he means to the program. How liked he is. He's so humble and just fun to be around. So I hate it for Javonte. I hate it for Travis. Second page of that story is you hate it for Travis because it's like every season there's something that just punches this team in the gut before things can really get going. It's been off the court stuff. It's been COVID. It just seems like, they just keep getting these curveballs that you just wonder what are they going to be able to do when they have a season where they're not, just dealt with a big old smack of bad luck right on the front end of it. So it's certainly thinking of Javonte, and I know it's bigger than a basketball thing, but it does hurt their chances. I mean, this guy was supposed to be one of the best players in the A-10. Now he's out for the year.
Ben, what are you working on this weekend at the Post-Dispatch?
Well, I'll give you a little tease. I got a Bryce Harper column coming for Sunday, and a little connection to...
Wait a minute. Bryce Harper, he plays for the Phillies. The Cardinals are out of the World Series. I'm trying to connect the dots here.
I'm not stumping for the Cardinals to trade for him or sign him. I already did that.
I will.
Really
go
good,
ahead.
So I can eat my crow there for not trusting in the Tyler O'Neill projections. Bryce Harper gets hit in the face by Hennessy Cabrera. And it wasn't the end of the story. I'll just say that. So I'll have a column about that in Sunday's Post-Dispatch.
That sounds like a Musial Award.
Thanks for ruining it.
Am I right?
Yeah. He's going to receive one. And I think it's really cool because of the way he handled it, but also because of Harper, who was at a time not long ago viewed as a guy who would probably be near the bottom of people's list of who they would guess might win a sportsmanship award, both for reasons that were sometimes fair and reasons that sometimes were not. But I'm really impressed by the player he's become to be. And I think it's really cool that there's a story there that started right in St. Louis's backyard, its home ballpark. It's a good chance to tell the story of how these Musial Awards came to be and why they're so important to these athletes.
That's a great angle. I'm assuming we're meeting in person this year for the Musial Awards. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes, sir.
Good deal. And that's got to be coming up in a couple of weeks, I would assume.
It is, yeah, coming up, and it's been announced. The awards are award recipients will be have been announced, and it will be in person. So, you know, the St. Louis Sports Commission does such a great job, you know, coming up with these awards, hosting them. It gets bigger every year. They now have a national broadcast. It's just grown and grown. And if you haven't been before, it's really special. You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll leave with a bounce in your step entering the holiday season. It's November 20th at Stiefel Theater. You can find tickets. Check out the musicalawards.com. It's a really, really special thing, and it's all St. Louis's own. So pretty cool thing for St. Louis to be recognized for.
No doubt. Hey, Ben, thank you so much, and good stuff. We'll catch up next week.
Sounds good, brother. Talk to you soon. Have a good weekend.
You too. Ben Fredrickson of the Post-Dispatch, and as always, brought to you by Blue Tail Medical Group.